Welcome to the Bonneville Up to Speed podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Ostie, and this is a podcast covering all things land speed racing on every level, from vintage small displacement motorcycles to cutting-edge streamliners and everything in between. And today, we're honored to have a very special guest from the garage shop, Mr. Aaron Brown. Aaron, welcome.
How are you doing today?
Doing awesome, my friend. Before we get deep into Aaron's story, I do want to take a quick moment to say thank you to those who have subscribed to the Bonneville Up to Speed podcast. We've gotten a lot of great feedback. We appreciate it. If you're into this kind of stuff, go ahead and subscribe. And if you have some ideas or thoughts, you can hit us at email news@bonnevillepodcast.com, or of course, just leave comments on our Facebook page and we'll go from there. So thank you. But now on to the big show. So welcome, Aaron.
I appreciate you having me today. And I think what you're doing is really bringing some neat awareness to land speed racing in Bonneville, and, you know, to help that whole deal move into the future. I think it's pretty neat.
Well, thank you. And that's the whole goal. And I appreciate you saying that. You know, it's been my experience that land speed racing, it's not something you can practice for in your neighborhood, you know, so it's a little off-putting to those who don't know much about it. So hopefully we can shed some light on what it takes to go out and have fun in the salt or the dirt.
The one thing about it, once you go, very few people never go back. It's addicting.
That's for sure. So in your story, you came kind of from the NASCAR world, right? And before that, maybe dirt track or asphalt. What's your history?
Well, kind of funny story is I was in the Navy in the late 80s and early 90s. And after I got out of the Navy, I really wasn't too interested in staying in Pennsylvania. But at that age, we never know what we want to do. My dad gave me an Auto Week magazine, and he said they got these stock cars in North Carolina and you should go there. So I'd never been to North Carolina, and I came down here in 92-93, and that's when I started my career in NASCAR. I just walked into a couple shops, and I had a pretty wonderful trade from the Navy. I was a TIG welder, so I was trained in the Navy to be a welder. And first job I had was with Rick Mast in the Skoll Ford Thunderbird. And from there, I went on to work for Evernham Motorsports in the when Dodge returned to NASCAR. I was part of the engineering and R&D program for that. And then from there, I went to work on the RAD program at Dale Earnhardt Incorporated. That program specialized in Daytona and Talladega restrictor plate cars. So, you know, so when I moved down, I lived beside Bobby Isaac's sister, Goldie Witherspoon, and I used to listen to those guys tell their stories, you know, about Bobby when he won the 1970 Grand National Championship. And then also, you know, when he went to the Salt, and Goldie always said that when he went out there and set those USAC records, that was the most favorite thing he did. And she asked me before she passed away, actually a few days before she passed away, she said, if, you know, would you take Bobby's car back to the Salt someday? And I said, I will do that. And in 2006, Russ Wicks went out there with an old Jimmy Spencer car and went 226. Bobby went 216. And then Russ went 226 in a stock car. And I called my friends from Dodge, and Ray Evernham helped us out. And in 3 weeks, we took a car out there and went 244 miles an hour.
A few weeks?
3 weeks we had to put this car together. And Ray's a really good friend of mine, and he thought it'd be really cute to give us a Speedway car that was literally in a million pieces.
Of course, yeah.
Wow. So yeah, we got basically a bare chassis and a cart full of parts and had to put this car together. And Mike Cook was out there and he kind of certified the whole deal. And, you know, it was fun. I think they got a Guinness Book of World Records out of it or something like that.
Yeah, that is a super cool story. And what's really cool is that, so you, as you dove into this whole racing scene from day one, you were aligned with some really top teams, top names, doing some really great stuff.
Yeah, I think, you know, when I worked at Dale Earnhardt Incorporated, everything we did was in the wind tunnel, and it just almost kind of became natural to be, you know, if it looks right, it usually is. If it doesn't, it's not. Mm-hmm. And, you know, through, I don't know, 4,500 hours of wind tunnel time and development work and things we did on those speedway cars, it just happened to be, you know, Bonneville and the experience that the garage shop have and the people here, it all seemed to fit for us. It was a real comfortable place to go and try to go as fast as you can go. And you're your own worst enemy. Sometimes things work, sometimes they don't. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's what I like best about Bonneville is the harder you work, the faster you go. And you got to, you know, work smart and, you know, figure out where you can squeeze the most juice out of that orange. You know, don't chase unicorns.
Well, that's a great way to put it. And it's really fascinating to me to see. So the first time I saw your cars, garage shop cars, a couple years ago, I was at Bonneville and I see this rig with this tent out in front, and I look over and I'm like, wait a minute, somebody brought a couple of vintage NASCAR out here. But it turns out those are fresh builds for the Salt.
Yes. I met a good friend of mine, Vance Kirshner, owns a company, Labware, and he was actually a partner of ours on our Roush Yates, our cup car, our, you know, the new cup car, the six car that we have. And we had that out there in 2019 when the track was really, really bad. Mm-hmm. And really didn't get to run it. And, but you know, the car went 240 in a mile and a half at Spaceport. So it has plenty of speed. So Vance is like, well, let's do something different. What are your thoughts? And I said, well, you know, we did the 71 car, but that was like a newer cup car with Bobby's paint scheme on it. I'd really like to build a Dodge Daytona, but put all our current technology, everything we've learned between 1970 and now, is take the best of that technology and put it into that car. And we did that. We built that car from the ground up. The chassis, every piece of that car was handcrafted. The body, everything was handmade. And so we got through with that, and Vance was like, well, how are we going to have an Aero Wars if we don't have a Talladega? And Bonneville is like 6 months away, Big Chief, you know? And I happened to have an old Holman Moody Talladega sitting behind my shop. I bought it. I don't even know where, remember where I got it, down in Florida from a friend of mine. And it was a failed restoration project, but I bought it because it had a roof, the quarters and the roof and the quarter tops, deck lid and a hood and that Talladega nose cone on it. Mm-hmm. So we chopped that Holman Moody car up and basically cut the roof off of it, and we hand fabricated the Talladega just like we did the Daytona. And we learned some stuff from the Daytona that we applied to the Talladega. It was really to pay tribute to the guys that, you know, came before me in NASCAR, and everybody that works here. We have 20 employees, and everybody that works here in the shop is worked on a cup team for the most part. Some of the younger guys haven't, but most of the older guys, and I've worked with them for years. Mm-hmm. So it really wasn't about how fast those cars could go at Bonneville. I wanted to honor what Bobby did. I didn't want to beat him. He ran 216.914, and I ran 217.019.
Wow.
And that's all I wanted to do. And, you know, we played with the cars a little bit, you know, and the last run I made, I asked Spencer, because I was trying to get close to that. And my son, he's an engineer here at the shop. He leads our engineering group. And I said, how many RPMs do you think this thing needs to be at to go 216? He said, 8,500. He goes, you got about 800 RPM of wheel spin. About 8,500 should get you right where you want to be. And I looked down and saw that 8,500 at the 4 mile mark and just pulled the parachute, and magically it came up exactly what Bobby ran.
Wow. That's really cool. So it's fun to chat with you because you have a humility and some humble ways to share this stuff. These cars are unbelievable. I want our listeners to realize that the amount of work and the fabrication and the technology and the skill level it took to build these, you're doing a nice job of kind of glazing over it, but these are serious cars. Let's talk about the Daytona. Now, I know, you know, the Daytona has its following in NASCAR, and then, of course, you've got the street versions, and they've got the nose cone, the wing, and the extractors and all the rest of it, and they're cool looking, the specific glass in the back. Interestingly enough, I think one of the coolest Daytonas ever really was the Disney Pixar version of Lightning McQueen's adversary there.
Yeah.
The King, right? The King Richard version, because that was kind of a little bit of a cartoon. It was smoothed out. It was just a cool looking thing. What you've done is kind of combine the two, because if you took a dead nuts profile of an original car, that's not what you built. You've got a rake. You got a chop in the roof. Tell me about the style of this thing. Cause it's instantly identifiable, but it's been massaged every way it can.
That was very difficult because as we were building this car, I had big pictures of Bobby's actual car with Tim Wilburn owns that car. And there's actually pictures on our social media, of those two cars side by side at his museum in Alabama. So I had big pictures of Bobby's car from every different angle. We could have done a million things to make that thing so crazy slick, but it wouldn't have been identifiable as a Daytona anymore. It was very important to me to combine current engineering, safety, and technology with and not lose fact of the body lines of the 1970s and what those men and women created. So that was probably the biggest thing, is to keep them looking very similar, but yet improve some things. Now, in 1970, in NASCAR, you got a street car and you put a roll cage in it and went racing for the most part. Mm-hmm. It's not like what it is today, or even the early 2000s when we would twist bodies three ways a Sunday.
Well, they call them stock cars for a reason.
Right.
Back then, yeah.
So we built a chassis and hung a body on it. So we had a little bit more leeway when it came to body lines, you know. And a fun fact about the Daytona, a stock Dodge Charger windshield will fit in the window bed. That car was built. That was one of my parameters of not to get away from stock body lines, is we ordered a 69 Charger windshield, and that's how the windshield posts were built.
Nice.
Now we laid it back a little bit and pulled the roof back a tick. You know, the reason that roof is actually a stock height. It's just that we moved the roof back maybe half three quarters of an inch, and we moved it. We didn't move it any more than the factory cowl or the roof line for the windshield would allow. We just kind of manipulated that a little bit, and you know, we dropped the nose 4 inches. And one of the things about the Daytonas that I never really liked this. I think the nose cones were too long, and that even the race cars looked really goofy. So we pulled the nose back 2 inches because the overhang in the front from a side profile to overhang in the rear, the front was like 9 feet long. The wheels didn't look balanced in the car.
Right.
And that's because they were dealing with a 69 Charger. They got to put this nose cone thing on. They're not going to move, inner fender wells and cows and stuff like that to make this thing look right. But Harry Hyde, Bobby Isaac's crew chief, he did move it. Mm. He did move that stuff. And when we put those cars side by side, they are almost identical.
Interesting.
They our car and Bobby's car, Tim Welburn's car, there's some pictures on our Instagram, it's the Garage Shop 200, or Facebook, the Garage Shop. There's pictures of those cars side by side, and you can barely tell the difference between the two of them.
Yeah, and at first glance, so I'm familiar with that car, you know, and I've seen, you know, the original up close. And then when I was casually strolling by at Bonneville, I thought that was it. I thought it was back. And then I noticed it was a little shinier.
Yeah, it was real close. And when we built the Talladega, one of the really cool things about that, I think there's some videos on our YouTube channel, is when Donnie Allison came to the shop. And I used to work with Donnie back when I worked at King Racing for Kenny Bernstein, and Hutch Strickland drove the 26 Quaker State car. Donnie was kind of like, you know, that Donnie Hutt is Donnie's brother, son-in-law. And Donnie would come by the shop and you'd be back there hanging a fender, and he'd come back and he'd go, "You need to move that fender an eighth inch." And I'm like, "Why?" He goes, "'Cause I told you so."
Nice.
And so every time you come in the shop, you count on getting yelled at. And, you know, to have Donnie, you know, circle back and reunite with us, you know, here at our shop, and have him come and see the Talladega. And that's what he drove. You know, I mean, that's the exact paint scheme that him and Banjo had. And, you know, to see that glimmer in his eye and walk around the car and touch it. And, you know, one of the funny things is Donnie said, you got to get the back of these cars up in the air. You got to get them up in the air. They ain't going to work. He goes, "I'm telling you, it'll be a death ride if you don't get the back of this Talladega up in the air." First time I drove that car at Arkansas, went 226 miles an hour in that car in a mile and a quarter from a standing start, and it was a death ride.
Essentially, what he's referring to is the lack of downforce in the back gets the rear end light, and you start to lose traction back there, and they get squirrely, right?
Well, and it's a complete lack of side force also, because the back of the Talladega kind of tapers in. So, and especially on the salt, anytime the car goes into a little bit of yaw, there's no side force to kind of help straighten it out. So it kind of, dances down through there ever so slightly. It's a little unnerving, but it's not uncontrollable. I mean, if I was ever going to take that car back to Bonneville, we would definitely go back to the wind tunnel and work on that yaw moment and side force to help. It is a little unnerving. It just hunts, you know. But, you know, we got the back of the car up in the air, like he said, and, you know, that car drives really, really good on concrete. It just needs a little more side force for Bonneville. You know, the Daytona, you know, drives really good, you know, with that big wing and uprights on the back. It has a little bit of an aero balance issue. I think that car needs a little more front downforce. You know, we can pin it down mechanically with rebound and shocks and bump stops and stuff like that, but then
it's because you shorten the nose.
Yeah. the ride quality goes all to crap when you drop it down on those bump stops, even soft ones. So, you know,
yeah.
You know, we're working on some stuff there with some current technology with Penske Racing shocks. You know, right now, we took the data we learned last year from the Cup cars and applied it to our Roadsters for this year. And I think we're going to have a much better ride quality and traction quality out of those cars with some of the stuff we're doing.
Well, and that's a whole nother story. And, before we leave, cause I do want to hear about those too, before we leave the NASCAR style stuff, in the Daytona, tell me about the driveline. What's powering that thing and what's underneath?
The Daytona is a, Penske, Dodge R6P7. With a CR2C CNR transmission, four-speed gearbox. And then the rear end is all from GearFX, rim finish, ceramic bearings. The car has very little. I think we're a 4.5% drivetrain loss.
Wow.
And, you know, that motor will turn 9,500. The Talladega is Roush Yates Engines, which they've been a very long-term partner with us. And in 10 years, we have never broken a Roush Yates Cup engine, ever. and we turned those engines 9,500 RPM.
Nice. Yeah.
And you know, same exact drivetrain, CR2C four-speed gearbox. They're all magnesium. They weigh about 40 pounds. They're really wow. nice pieces. And then Gear FX in the driveline. But, you know, I can't say enough about Roush Yates and what they've supplied us with to take to some of the harshest environments. I mean, those engines are really not designed to, you know, they have to be at optimum oil temperature and all that stuff. And it's very hard in land speed racing to keep all that stuff right where you need it, you know, in line and all that. And those engines, those FR9s at near 10,000 RPM, you can put your hand on the gear shifters, not one harmonic in it.
That's really, really wild.
A pushrod V8 engine, and yeah. and we've never hurt one, and you know they make massive amounts of power for a 358 cubic inch motor.
Yeah, so you are basically using all NASCAR stuff. I mean, that's all
that's
right
it.
Out of the playbook. And we've talked to other guests in the past, you know, drawing the parallels and the differences between a land speed car and a drag race car, because, you know, drag racing is off the line and land speed's at the other end. What about the differences in the driveline from going with NASCAR to a, you know, like a circle, a super speedway design to the Salt? What are you doing anything to those engines, or are you, you know, outside of gearing and stuff like that inside?
That's a Roush Yates question.
Okay.
I mean, they supply us our engines and we bolt them in. Nick Ramey, he worked for Roush Yates for 28 years. He retired last year and became, you know, kind of our full-time go-to guy, Roush representative. And Jeff Clark and Mr. Yates kind of lets Nick do whatever he wants with our engine program. And it's really good to be able to go to the racetrack and not worry about that component of the vehicle. It lets you spend your mental dollars more on the handling, knowing that when you push that button, near 1,000 horsepower is going to come to life.
Mm, yeah, for sure. And again, getting into your ability to work with some of the top names and businesses in the industry, that's really cool.
Well, when I started this shop, I was all by myself, you know, 10 years ago. And as NASCAR changed, you know, a lot of guys that were my age at the time, were some of them went and built boats, some of them had hot rod shops. I've ended up, I would say 90% of the people that are here have been here for 5 years or more. And I've worked with them for 10, 15, and 20 years. And they're all master craftsmen across the boards. They put their heart and soul into everything that they do. And it allows me to, you know, run the business and focus on new avenues, whether it's the engineering group or different things that we're, you know, projects we're working on, you know, or getting going. So the people here are what really drives the show. And you're correct, to be able to have access to these kind of people that put their heart and soul into everything they do. I mean, money can't buy that.
No, exactly. And it's funny when you were talking before about that, that management attitude of do this because I said so, you know, it's a different world today. You don't really want that, but you don't get that so much anymore.
Way back when I became a manager, you know, or, you know, a team leader or something in the NASCAR stuff and was able to hire people and things like that, I always hired people that I thought were smarter than me. Mm-hmm. Which there's a big pool of people because I'm not that smart. So.
Well, you're smart enough to know that there are smarter people out there. And that's the key.
And you hire those people and you listen and learn and soak in their experiences and combine them with yours. And the end result is always going to be above and beyond what anybody expected.
Right. Yeah. Well, I'm a big fan of the Apollo program through NASA, and that's what, you know, Mission Control Gene Kranz would always say: get the best and brightest, surround yourself with them, and let them take you where they're going to take you. And in his case, they took us to the moon.
I was just there last week.
To the moon?
No, well, I wish, but I was at the Saturn or the Apollo where they launched the Apollo down there at NASA. I went to the Space Center.
You take the tour at Kennedy Space Center?
Oh yeah,
that's awesome, isn't it?
I'll tell you, if that doesn't make you proud to be an American, nothing will. I mean, what those men and women accomplished, unbelievable.
Yeah. They have the Astronaut Hall of Fame there, and I walked through, and there's like, you know, younger parents taking little kids through, and they're like, look, there's Neil Armstrong, and I'm standing in the corner crying, you know.
Yeah, that's how I felt. And I'll tell you, that deal they did where you walk into the room and they show the video of the Atlantis, and and then the screen kind of goes blank, and that the nose of the Atlantis is pointed right at you.
Yep.
That was impressive. I actually left there with one of those really expensive space shuttle models.
Oh, good.
I brought it back and I put it on my son's desk. You know, leads the engineering group. I put it in the engineering offices and I put a note on it. I said, nothing is impossible.
Nice. Well, that's awesome. You know, and it is truly inspirational. And not to, you know, do a total derail the topic here, but it kind of lines up. When I was down there, so did you go through the building where they've got the Atlantis shuttle hanging upside down?
Yes.
So I'm standing there, and there's one of the legitimate five shuttles hanging there upside down overhead. You don't realize how big this thing is until you're standing there. And this older gentleman comes up and he says, hey, do you have any questions about this? And I said, well, yeah, about a million, you know, what are you talking about? And his name was Ben Rader, and he was, it turns out, he worked on the shuttle program. He was an engineer. And he said, I built that hanging right there. What do you want to know? And I was like, oh, my gosh. And one of the quick trivia questions that I never realized is the cargo bay doors on the shuttle, they don't open on Earth. The motors are not strong enough to overcome gravity to open those. So they had to manually pull them open while they're working on them. And then when they get out in space, you know, gravity's much less and they can open up and close. So imagine designing something that doesn't even work in this environment and having it be, you know,
unbelievable. And, sometimes when we have problems, you know, we're trying to figure out a solution to a problem here at shop. And, you know, a couple guys standing around. I said, well, they launched space shuttles and flew them back to Earth. We should be able to fix this.
There you go. It's all about the perspective. I love it. I love it. So to bring us back to Earth, right? In addition to the vintage NASCAR program, you're also referring to the Roadsters. And you've got a couple of Roadsters that you guys campaign as well.
Yeah. Well, that was last year we were at Bonneville and, you know, a couple of officials were like, when are you going to build a car that fits in a class? You know, and the NASCAR stuff is, it's a love-hate relationship with Bonneville people. And I understand it. But I think the biggest thing they don't understand is we don't do it to go out there and go as fast as we can. You know, both those cars have been over 230 miles an hour on concrete. I did it because it was a personal quest for me. I promised Vance we would do it, and we would do it in style, and we would do it right. And that's what that whole program was about. It was about honoring the people in the past. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think Kiwi Paul, he says, you should build a car that fits in a class. I said, well, what car do you race? Him and Ken said, well, we got this C-Gas Roadster. Oh, that's got a NASCAR engine in it. We got this. So, Kiwi Paul is, and Ken have been great mentors to us. I probably talk to Kiwi every other day on rules. And, you know, I want to come out there and race in a class, and I want to honor the rules. And, you know, I didn't write the rule book. I'm just following it. I don't believe in like blatant cheating and that nonsense, but I do believe in creativity.
This sounds like a smoky unit conversation.
I mean, if the engine size says it's supposed to be 358, if you make it 359, that's cheating. Mm-hmm. That's a hard rule. And, I read the rule book and I started doing some research and, and read their rules and came up with kind of a concoction based off the rule book, a 32 forward wheelbase stock is 109 inches. You're allowed to add 3 inches to the stock wheelbase to, you know, for engines and stuff like that. A 34 Ford is 112 inches. So you can add 3 inches to that and be 115 inch wheelbase. Mm-hmm. And so I really felt that the 34 grill, I don't have any scientific proof of this, but I felt the 34 grill was not really what we wanted for a roadster. And I think the 32 grill, which is what my 39 pickup has on, is a 32 grill, is much better suited for land speed racing than the 34 grill with a car with no roof. So the rule book said that you could put any manufacturer grill you want on the car as long as it's Ford to Ford. So we ran through all the numbers and all the stuff and figured out that the 32 grill would fit on a 34 and be able to keep all the measurements that they require for the hood, the belt line on the hood length and all that. And that's where we started. And that's where we ended up. I think we did some things a lot differently on our chassis than that's been done in the past. I wanted a chassis that had a driver pod in it. I mean, mm-hmm. I do a lot of dumb things, but they're kind of scienced out.
Scientifically dumb things. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. They're kind of, you know, there's a risk factor and I like to mitigate that risk, especially when it comes to safety. So we designed these cars with an actual driver pod. The car is split down the center with steel sheet metal. So the driver actually sits on the left side of the car in a pod that's completely separated from all the fluids, all the electricals, all the batteries, everything. And Randy LaJoy stepped up and built us some custom SFI seats that we fitted into the Roadsters. They're actually really comfortable. We changed some designs, and they actually have the NASCAR-style headrest, the SFI headrest, which allowed us to make the cage a little wider, you know, for the driver to get in and out. And then one of the bonuses for that, it allowed us to make the windshield a little taller. So,
there you go.
Yeah, so it all worked out. And
well, by the way, none of this sounds like a stupid idea. This sounds very, very smart to be able to isolate the driver from all the cabling, all the plumbing, and build that pod for strength and also accommodate the driver. That's, you know, and it fits in the book. I mean, one of the things about the SCTA rule book is it is safety first on every single page. So, I mean, that's the important thing.
And, you know, they require 1 5/8, you know, 120 wall. We use 1 3/4, 120 wall DOM tubing. We probably, a lot of people look at our stuff and probably say it's overbuilt, but if I'd rather build it for worst case scenario than going fast. When it comes to safety, I really don't want to supersede, I don't want to look at speed and trade safety for it.
No. And you're also in a different environment where weight isn't quite the issue.
Yeah. And what's really odd is we got our first Roadster done. It was completely assembled before we took it apart to send it off to paint. We set it down on the scales and it was only 2,600 pounds. But and that was with the driver. So. Wow. You know, but we did calculate all our ballast points in the vehicle. It came right out at the front and rear weight we want in the ballast, you know, so we're going to get the weight with tungsten, we'll get where we want it to be. And the good thing is being that light, we can hyper tune the balance of the vehicle with the tungsten and make it that much, much better. Mm-hmm. I was really surprised the vehicle was that light. I mean, I was guessing right out of the box, we'd be 3,300 pounds, but I guess.
Well, I've seen pictures of that with the skin, you know, before the skin was installed, and there's a lot going on in that car, and it does not look light.
No, it doesn't, but it was just freaky.
Yeah, wow.
I don't know. I guess all the tubes are really short.
Yeah, there you go.
But, you know, we did, you know, a couple of the parameters. I wanted all our suspension to be inboard of the body panels. So we came up, actually, I have an FJ40 with a, it's four link in the rear and three link in the front. We basically took the kinematics from the FJ40, changed them around, and put a triangulated four link in the front on a coilover shocks.
Oh, wow.
So
that's interesting.
We were able to tuck everything underneath the hood, everything. And it gives it a nice clean look, and it's all adjustable. I mean, we can adjust our caster gain. We can start at 8 degrees of caster. So you got a little bit of a light wheel to wheel the thing, getting up to speed. And as it goes through its travel, in 2 inches, 2 inches of full travel on the bump stops, we can set our caster gain upwards of 16 to 20 degrees to put a little bit heavier wheel at high speed in it. So
right on.
That was one of the things I wanted, because what feels good at 100 miles an hour sometimes doesn't feel so good at 200.
No, so you basically have a variable caster rate. As you go faster, the car hunkers down, and then that caster angle increases, and it goes straighter.
Yep, and you know, these cars are kind of a science project. The rear suspension is just as interesting as the front suspension. You know, we looked around, and you know, we have the truck arm cars with the cup cars and cambered rear ends, and you know, everybody thinks, oh, we got these big tires, they don't work. Well, we got 4 degrees of camber in the rear end. We're probably riding on less of a tire contact patch than a 4-inch wide land speed tire. Mm. The outside of the tire doesn't even touch the ground. It's off the ground a half an inch. And I've driven cars out there with straight up rear ends and cambered rear ends. There's a huge difference.
Yeah, and you're not doing it just to be stanced.
No. So we looked around and kind of like, what big horsepower race vehicle runs on a track with no grip? Well, dirt late models. They make 900 horsepower, and they slide around dirt tracks with no grip.
Mm-hmm.
So back to Dale Earnhardt Incorporated, Dale Earnhardt Technologies, they make all the bird cages and four links. And so Spencer did all the kinematics on the fifth and sixth coil and everything, and we worked with John Quinn from Penske Shocks. And kind of came up with something. I'm not saying it's going to work, but it looks cool.
Hey, that's half the battle.
Right. you know, one of the good things with the relationship that we have with Penske Racing Shocks is they have a pull-down rig down there. And the first week of July, we're going to take the Roadster down to the pull-down rig and actually simulate a full run at Bonneville. And that'll tell us all our thrust lines you know, grip, how much grip we're putting to the ground and how much lift the car has in the rear. And so we'll be able to do a lot of fine tuning stuff there. And we have equipment here to be pretty ready for that. We have shock dynos and shock smashers and spring raiders and, you know, and all that stuff. So we've been working hard on that really for the last few months too.
That is really impressive to have all of that access to those machines. Tell me a little bit more about the pull-down rig, because I know my limited experience, I've seen where it allows you to, you know, crush the car to the ground and measure all the suspension dimensions and travel and direction everything's going in. But when you're talking about being able to measure downforce and stuff, how does all that work?
Well, the downforce and stuff, what the plan is right now is we're going to go with John Quinn. We're going to put the Roadster on the pull down rig. What the pull down rig will tell us is how much force the fifth and sixth coil will apply to the ground. And when that fifth and sixth coil, the rear end's in the bird cages, so that it kind of floats in these cages, and as the rear end wraps, that fifth coil goes up, and then your timing of the bird cages and the four link will determine how hard you're going to drive the rear tires into the ground. That's where you see these dirt late models lifting the left front tire up off the ground. That's what they're doing.
Gotcha. Okay.
And so, you know, fortunately for us, we only got to go straight, so it's half as scientific. So on that pull down rig, we will be able to determine what does what and when and where and how much grip, where is the fine line, where is too much, you know, or where is not enough. And we'll be able to do that through all our suspension travel, because the car sits on scales as it's pulled down and manipulated by these rams. Mm-hmm. So we'll see live wheel loads at different attitudes. So after that, what we take all that data and we kind of crunch it a little bit and see what we think's going to work, because all this is really neat and cool, but until you can correlate it on a racetrack, it doesn't mean anything. That's been my approach forever. So then we got a wind tunnel date in July. When we go to the wind tunnel date, we'll look at what downforce or lift or drag and see what our front to rear aero balance is. And we'll try to match the aero balance up with our front to rear, static weights and apply that, combine it with the pull down machine and kind of see if all this stuff works.
Yeah. Well, it's fascinating to take that approach because, in the very beginning of this episode, we talked about how there are those who are kind of maybe put off by land speed racing because they feel they can't do it and they don't have the access. And we do see, the vast, vast majority of competitors and teams and people that are just out there running, it's a guy and his buddy in a home garage,
Yep.
So you've got the full spectrum. But what are your words of encouragement to somebody who doesn't have access to the wind tunnel and to the shock dynos and to the, the full shop?
I mean, I've been out at Bonneville and the other guy with Daytona and even Ken Coe, we've helped them with their air boxes and different things. Advice is always free. And I'm not saying I'm right or wrong, but I'll help anybody that I can. And I always will. But, the guys, I started in my garage. I mean, with a welder and a sheet metal brake. You just gotta do what feels right and really think it through and find people you can lean on. I lean on Wayne Jessel a lot. I lean on Kiwi Paul and Ken Coe. Lee Kennedy has been a major mentor to us. I mean, there's been a lot of people that have really helped us through the years at Bonneville. And the more you can soak up from people like that, you can apply what you want. It doesn't matter where you work on your car. I mean, when we used to race dirt late models years ago, we'd work on them in a car wash in the middle of the night just to get to the race the next day.
In the car wash, because the lights were on and it was a space.
Yeah. You could wash the car and scale it and reset it up and do all your work in the middle of the night and nobody bothered you.
That's great.
So I know I've been there. That's where I came from. I'm very fortunate to have the people I do around me. And I have access to those resources and I try to manage them properly and apply the technology that works. And everything we talked about with the roadsters, it could be a complete failure. I'm prepared for that. Mm-hmm. we don't know. Mm-hmm. But
and that's part of the fun.
Exactly. We you could say all this neat and cool stuff. It doesn't mean it's going to work or make you go fast. I can tell you that
right. Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, you mentioned before advice is free. My advice is free and worth it, by the way. But one thing that I do like about the land speed racing community is if you ask questions, people seem very, very willing to help other people out. It's not, put a wall up around your pit and hide all your secrets. So like you're saying, if you're smart enough to listen and to be respectful of that information, you can learn anything you want.
Yeah. And that's where, the disparity, like in NASCAR, a guy can't build a car in his garage and go race it at a cup race. It's ridiculous. It's not what 25 years ago you could, but now you can't. And that's because of all the super secret, nonsense. And it ruined the sport, in my opinion. It really did.
I remember being at Joe Gibbs Racing, shooting a television episode a long, long time ago, early 2000s maybe. And we're getting a tour of the shop. And I've got this TV cameraman next to me. And the crew member walks up to this toolbox that was full of sway bars, splined sway bars, and he slowly closes the drawer and says, "You can't see that on camera." And I'm thinking, there is no data we can get from a television camera about a splined sway bar in a drawer. But that's how secretive, you can't see anything.
Yeah, it gets a little carried away. And, I like to help whoever I can. Another person that's been a huge help to us on our Streamliner project is the Speed Demon guys. Mm-hmm. Kenny and Keith Kohlspeck and Jimbo and Steve Watt. We're actually working on a project together with Steve Watt and Mr. Ferguson out in California. Mr. Ferguson was building the quick changes for Speed Demon, and we needed one for our Streamliner, and we ended up coming together on a deal, where we completely engineered, went through and, updated everything that they've done and learned and listened to them and what they felt they could improve. And our engineering department, re-engineered the whole thing. And we're getting ready to come out with 5 quick change rear ends that have been completely built in house, in conjunction with Steve Watt and Mr. Ferguson.
Nice.
It's a great relationship with Speed Demon and Mr. Watt. And my hat's off to him for really, he's been to our shop and gave us a lot of advice. And we listen. I never built a Streamliner.
Yeah. And he certainly has. I mean, Steve's been a great friend of ours for a long time. He was our first guest on the show, and a wealth of information. That dude's forgotten more about this stuff than I will ever know.
It'd be like Dale Earnhardt telling you how to drive a race car. You should listen.
For sure. Certain people you listen to.
That's when you be quiet and you listen. And, Steve's been a big help, and Carbon Kenny's going to do the body for us. We're closing in on that. We're working with Corvid Engineering on all the CFD and different things with that program. All the suspension was designed in-house here for that car. And it's got a lot of really neat things on it, active aero and some other things that we're incorporating into this vehicle. And really, this car isn't really a garage shop car. And we're doing this, this car is a corporate project for Labware and Vance Kirshner. This car, I think, is, I would call it a Bonneville company car, because so many people at Bonneville have had input on what we're building. Whether it's Lee Kennedy or Kiwi Paul, Ken Coe, Carvin Kenny and Keith and Steve Watt and Jimbo and, all those guys, when they talk, we listen. So this is not, a super secret garage shop project. I'd call it a Bonneville company car, considering the amount of people that race out there has had input, that their inputs made a difference in what we're building.
Sure. So it's a collaborative effect of some smarties. That's good.
Yeah, it really is, from super high technology all the way down to the guy that changes the motor, mm-hmm. We've listened to everybody and what they'd like to see in a vehicle that's easy to work on and goes fast and collects great data. And we're applying everything that everybody says as much as we can into this vehicle. So it's not a one person show.
So what are we going to see from you guys at Speed Week this year?
It'd be the 234 Ford Roadsters. We're going to go out and, I think we're going to race the C-Gas Street Roadster. I think the record in that's 229. I'm going to be happy just to make it there. whatever happens after that will be a bonus, because, a year ago, August, I said we were going to build 2 Roadsters. We didn't really get all enough parts and bodies and stuff to start until December, and we're closing in on finishing up 2 brand new cars.
That's impressive, for sure.
So, I'll be super tickled when I see the trailer drawers go up the day before we leave to go to Bonneville.
There you go.
To me, that'll be a mission accomplished. Whatever happens past that, I'm really looking forward to working with the team. One interesting fact about these Roadsters, Vance's car is equipped with the basic data system that we're going to use on the Streamliner, it has about 30 channels of information. That car is actually being used as a tool for the engineers to start working with the data and the MoTeC systems and data collection and trend setting. It's a stepping stone for them to get to the Streamliner, because that car is probably going to have 450 channels of information.
Holy smokes.
So that's why we're doing this, for Vance. And Vance has really took a big love to driving at Bonneville and being a part of it. And, the Gold Star sponsors and stuff. And he's really good for the sport. He means well, and he loves to be there, and he loves the science behind it. Whether you're in your garage or driving a space shuttle, he really likes the science behind land speed racing, because there's so many unanswered questions when you make a pass. Millions.
Yes. Yeah. And that's really what it's all about. You know, it's far more than, you know, somebody who doesn't get into this stuff that thinks, what, you get out there and you drive a car in a straight line, big deal. And it's like, no, there's a little more to it than that.
There's a lot more. And you can make it as complicated. You can make it as complicated or as easy as you want. It's all up to you of how you want to approach it. And everybody's had success. They have a different approach angle. There's nothing wrong with that.
This is true. It's important to point out that you don't need to have the space shuttle. You can still have a carbureted flathead analog, nothing, you know, deuce out there and be nostalgic and run what you run.
Well, that's like this year, you know, we got the team engineer over there on Vance's car, and then team one tack in my car. It's going to be interesting to see how they stack up against each other. And that's kind of what we're looking at. I don't care if we go 110 miles an hour, you know, as long as Vance has a good time and all the crew guys have a good time. I've learned a long time ago, when you go into something and all you focus on is how fast you're going to go, you're going to be really disappointed at the end of the day. I don't care how successful you are. It's better to go in and think about preparation and people and making it fun and having a good time. The speed will come. And like I said, success to me is, first is getting out there, getting the cars down the track, and bringing everybody home safe. Whatever happens in between there and there, the cards are going to fall where they're going to fall if you focus on preparation.
Yeah, well, it's a great perspective. And if you play the safety card right, you can come back again next time and try it again.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Aaron, this has been a real treat. I appreciate you joining us and sharing the stories. Once again, maybe throw out the Instagram or the Facebook page so the people can follow along.
Yeah, there's a lot of Bonneville content on our YouTube channel, which is The Garage Shop. On Instagram, we are The Garage Shop 200. And Facebook, we're The Garage Shop.
Excellent. And I've actually watched some of the videos on the YouTube channel. I should have said that before. Great stuff. Very well done. Very entertaining.
We like to kind of keep it just, we're just a bunch of old guys doing that are fortunate enough to do fun stuff.
And there you go.
That's the way we want to keep it.
That's a goal in life. Well, listen, again, thanks so much. I will see you out there at Speed Week, and maybe we'll do a follow-up. I would love to have you back again to learn how things went.
Awesome. I can't wait.
All right. Well, listen, thanks again.
Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. The Bonneville Up to Speed podcast is produced with the AOK of the Southern California Timing Association and is available on all major podcast platforms. Subscribe if you're into land speed racing, and be sure to visit scta-bni.org for all the latest news and the calendar of SCTA racing events at El Mirage and the Bonneville Salt Flats. Thanks for tuning in. And for Aaron Brown, I'm Kevin Oste, and now you're up to speed.